morning. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, belated Thanksgiving greetings. But yeah, like you said, we have the whole holiday in front of us. It's a great time of year. I really enjoyed Thanksgiving with the family. And you know, I didn't go to the racetrack for, I haven't been to the racetrack since the 20th. So I've been home. On the 19th, I had a horse coming off the racetrack at the three-quarter pole gap, pull a wing ding, and left me flat on my back. And I bruised some ribs and irritated some old brakes. So I haven't gone to the track since the 20th. But I'm in the healing process. We're doing good. And it was, these days you're going to get banged up. It might as well be during the holiday season, and then you don't go to the track and you enjoy the family even more. So, and you know what? The horse that threw the wing ding a few days later ran and won. And it's funny. Yeah, I landed on my back, not on my face. But his name is Dirt in My Face. And I'm thinking, boy, what an appropriate name for a horse that just dropped me. But it should have been named Dirt on My Back, because I landed flat on my back. I got up. I knew I hurt my ribs pretty good. And Danny Velasquez and Randy Allen, what two gracious individuals. Danny gets me up off the ground, and he says, what the hell are you doing coming out in this weather? And Randy Allen's brushing me off and pulling my pant leg down. I'm thinking, man, I never even rode for these guys, and they have a tremendous amount of compassion and respect. But that's how racetrackers are. They pick you up when you fall down. You know, they might be your biggest competitors all throughout the year, but when you hit the ground, they're the first ones to pick you up. So my thoughts go out to Randy Allen and Danny Velasquez. I thought, boy, that was really nice of you guys. Really good guys.
Well, that is nice, and I'm hearing this for the first time that you had a bit of a spill. So you're taking me by surprise.
Well, you know, us old jocks are used to hitting the ground, and we don't talk about it a whole lot. And at times it becomes an embarrassment, not a traumatic experience. You say, geez, this son of a gun got me off. Coming out the gap. Wasn't even on the track. Coming out the gap. At least if he'd have done it on the racetrack, there's some cushion. Coming out the gap on the horse path, there ain't no cushion. The ground's froze.
That's a good point.
I was glad that, and it was right near the barn that he belongs to, barn 25, and he just pranced back to the barn and looked back like as if to say, hey, dummy, you didn't stay on. What happened? And I'm thinking, when I got up, I took a deep breath. It was like a sharp pain in my side. And I'm thinking, man, I either broke some ribs or even just as bad as breaking is if you separate that soft tissue that holds them together. That's what I did. So I went and got a CAT scan, and the doctor gave me the CAT scan. He looked at me. He says, you got multiple plates. He did it from the waist up. He says, you got multiple plates, multiple screws, and you got fractured vertebrae that have just looked like they're irritated, probably from this incident. I says, that doesn't hurt. None of that stuff hurts. It's all healed up. What hurts is my ribs. He says, if that's all that hurts with all this metal and screws in you, you're doing real good, son. It was a really nice doctor, but he was great. But he came back, and the nurse came back and said, how do you stay and look as fit as you look with all this metal and screws in you and all these old broken set fractures? I said, I take that for granted. You know, that's what jocks do when they ride all these years. That's what they do. They get these things. You know, we don't try to get them. They just kind of come along with the profession. Screws, plates, and busted bones.
Jeez. You're like the Tin Man.
That's enough of me. I've been listening to the show. I missed it a few days. I think the last day I listened to it, they were talking about the cancellation from the jockeys.
Yeah.
That's always a controversial situation. Of course, when you're riding the Mid-Atlantic states, you know, you wind up having to make these decisions. And sometimes, of course, trainers and horsemen sometimes are really affected negatively by them. And sometimes you say to yourself, well, they might be affected negatively by this decision today, and maybe it's an error on the side of caution, but at least it was made, and jockeys have to do things like that at times. You know, at times it's easier to swallow that pill than it is to go out there and have a mishap, possibly, that could have been avoided. But, you know, and then, you know, we think about the situations that occurred in California with all the, you know, the breakdowns and everything like that, and the adverse weather conditions that they had out there. And, you know, when you think of it that way, you think, geez, I wonder if some of the riders out there, if they would have gotten together, they might have been able to avoid some of those mishaps and made these tough decisions that are very controversial. They actually affect your business as a jockey in a negative way if you're labeled as one of the big mouths that do this type of thing, because you make sometimes an error on the side of caution, and sometimes it's the right decision. But sometimes it's an easier pill to swallow, like I said, than it is to have something, some tremendous mishap. But you know the other thing, Steve? I don't know, when you're faced with adverse, unusual weather conditions, and you're a jock that's been riding in California your whole career, and you maybe haven't been exposed to those conditions, sometimes you don't know what to do, and you just say, I will get through it. Where when you ride in this East Coast, Mid-Atlantic states, you're exposed to every weather condition, every track condition that is ever going to exist at any time. So you become pretty proficient in making these decisions, and you also become a person that understands the change in weather. You know, a track can be bad in the morning, the sun comes out, it can change dramatically in the afternoon. You know, and you also become aware of the conditions of the racetrack where it's been sealed. And sealed and floated, you know, it's not always done with high compression plates. You know, you can float a racetrack and it can be just flat. It can also be floated to where it's compressed and hard. And, you know, and maybe the riders out there that have been riding in California would have had a different opinion of the racetrack if they had had a lot of experience with that type of weather condition that they were dealt, the excessive amount of rain and everything, and everything else that led into that Santa Anita fiasco. But you know what? You don't know. You don't know what the jocks room was like out there. You know, I know Mike Smith, he's been out there quite a while, and a lot of times you say, well, he started on the East Coast. Yeah, but, you know, he wasn't here the bulk of his career, and there was other people that are out there that maybe started on the East Coast, but they weren't here the bulk of their career, and they maybe didn't understand the different changes in racetracks because of adverse weather condition that they've never been dealt with in California. That kind of
But it's a different the equation there is unusual just because of you know potential underlying. You know, underlying elements, and in terms of creating vulnerabilities or exploiting vulnerabilities in horses. I mean, depending on what transpired with the sealing of the track and how hard the track was underneath. So it's not as if riders going out there on a day-to-day basis, we're going to immediately say, oh, the track's no good. I mean, there were people that were expressing concern about the track and spots on the track. And, you know, that's nationwide. That, you know, that's wherever there's, you know, wherever there's any kind of track. It doesn't even have to be limited to dirt. You know, there's bad spots that you get on grass as well. But I mean, you do bring up, Tony, a point that you can address and explain to people what goes on in that room and what are the conditions. And even if you just limit this to you know, the northeastern track experience and winter track, and even during summers when we get heavy rains and you know, guys will come back and say, you know, the first turn is washing out. I mean, explain what the, and you also did a nice job kind of hinting at about clubhouse lawyers, as they say in baseball, you know, guys that are problems in terms of, you know, creating negativity. But talk about how those decisions are made, and when guys come back, you know, after races, when freezing rain is setting in or sleet, and maybe the track is starting to freeze and clump. Explain how the discussion unfolds.
Well, you know, jocks' room mentalities have changed over the years, because I can remember when I was a kid growing up, and then we raced on the East Coast in the wintertime, and we raced at tracks like Liberty Bell and tracks that were, you know, dual-purpose tracks, you know, and changed over from trotting tracks to flat tracks. And you were very reluctant in the 70s, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, to even cancel, because the show... It was the only show was the live show. There wasn't all this simulcasting. And, of course, jocks' rooms have changed over here because the live show isn't the only show. And there's simulcasting and sports betting and everything else that goes on at racetracks and casinos. So the live show isn't the most important thing that generates revenue for a racetrack anymore. But what happens in the jocks' room is... Jocks don't get elected most of the time as being the spokesman for the jocks room. It's usually some guy that's got enough balls to stick his neck out and put safety above his business. And in the years, over the years, you know, years ago, it was always the elite riders of the room. You know, when it was the Walter Blums and the riders of that caliber that were very well respected. You know, their opinion was respected. You know, the riders that they won a lot of races, they rode a lot of races, and the jocks room individuals in the jocks room really totally respected their opinion. So they weren't elected as the jocks room spokesman. It was kind of just something that they stood up and said, you know what, I'm going to be here. I ride the entire meet. I've seen this racetrack over the years, and I'm going to express my opinion. So you go ride a race, you ride a horse that doesn't seem to handle the racetrack. You see some adverse conditions out there, some washout spots, some stall spots, you know, or a track has been floated to the point where it's concrete, you know, and you might come back and try to say, listen, guys, what do you think of the racetrack? You know, did you see what's at the eighth pole? There's a real washed out soft spot going into the first turn. It's like a paved road. So the first thing you wind up doing as a jockey ref, you get the guys together. You also inform the stewards that we're having a problem with the racetrack, but we're going to call the track superintendent. In my day, it was, you know, whoever was track superintendent, Roy Smith, of course, was one of the track superintendents that we had great communication with, and he taught a lot of riders, you know what, communicate with me, see if I can eliminate the situation or alleviate the problem that you're citing. He would actually say, you know, watching the track from the, or else watching it from the maintenance shed is a lot different. And I know there's many riders up there with qualified opinions. If you cite a problem to me, give me some time before you cancel, you know, another race. Give me some time to see if I can go out there and address the issue and maybe change the situation to where it's acceptable. And that's where racetrack superintendents and jockeys have to have an ongoing relationship, a good communication, because if you don't, you'll jump to the conclusion, man, track's bad, he can't do nothing, and screw it, we're canceling, we're leaving. And once you get them all walking out the door, you never get them walking back in, jockeys. You know, so it's a process, and it's a process that should be followed. first notify people that there is a problem with the racetrack, even if it's the trainer that rode for that particular race. They say, listen, you know, hey, Joe Blow, you know, we went into the first turn. This guy like a fall on his head, or at the eighth pole, there's a washed out spot. They've got to do something to correct this issue, because you can't keep running through this mess all day long. Well, just plain and simple, they better open this track up. It's like a paved road. When it comes to field racetracks, I can't say it enough. It's not always compressed. Sometimes it's just flat, where the water will hit the surface and run off because it's flat and there's no arrow marks to keep the water on the track. And it runs off, you know, and a lot of times, you know, what they'll do is close the track early in the morning when this weather starts to come, and they'll flatten it out so the water will run off. But also you need a good crown, a good bank of racetrack. You need good drainage, you know, to take and handle that water. But every time a track is flat doesn't mean it's compressed to the point of being like a cement paved road. It can just be flat. Those plates that compress that can compress the racetrack are hydraulically operated to where how much pressure they can put on them to cause a floated racetrack to become extremely hard or just to become flat. At the situation in California, we had, you know, like I said, it might have been jockeys inexperienced and didn't know what they were looking at. It could have been the assistant track superintendent who took over Dennis Moore's job, the track superintendent who had been, I don't know, he was terminated, but he wasn't there, and his assistant took over. Maybe he was overdoing the compression and the floating of the race. There's a zillion reasons why things like that transpire, and it's not always because, oh, you got an overall bad racetrack and no drainage, or we need synthetic tracks. The people that are behind synthetic tracks are going to say, oh, see, this doesn't happen on synthetic tracks. It's all BS. It's a highly stressful athletic event. You're going to have jockeys hit the ground, and you're going to have horses get hurt. And the best way I can put it to anybody, it's not a pristine business that doesn't include highly stressful athletic event for horse and jockey. There's going to be injuries in any sport. And I always hate these people that say, well, you make them run. You don't make them run. You never watch these horses train, you idiot. These horses go out there and you can't stop them from running. So who the hell are you to tell me I make them run? I've been on hundreds of thousands of horses. I've ridden 34,000 races, and I'm on my pedestal right now. And I know what makes horses run. It's called instinct. It's bred into them. You're half the time trying to stop them from running off with you, not making them run. And then they say, oh, yeah, but horses don't have a choice. And people get hurt in human athletic events. Well, they don't have a choice either. If you're getting a multimillion-dollar contract and you're not performing and you're going to have bills coming out your ass, you don't have a choice. You better go out there and perform. You better go get your knee injected. You better go get this injected. You better figure out that you have to perform as a human athlete. Don't tell me human athletes have a choice. Their financial situation, their contract.
Yeah, they're obligated. They're obligated.
They're obligated. Yeah, there ain't no choice that, you know, unless the guy just can't walk and he's absolutely busted up and just can't even perform to any level. He's going out there and performing. It's not he's got a choice. His choice was made for him by team owners, by his financial situation, by his wife that's running up the credit card. And that his choice is made for him. Don't come out with that bullshit, because I can't stand it when I hear these people, these greenheart assholes that never been on a horse, tell me what a horse wants to do or what I make them do. So sick of it. But,
well, not at all. We're coming to the point where some people are, and I called for this months ago in terms of just pushing back and you know, instead of saying we're doing everything. Of course, we're doing everything we can. We've always done all we can.
Right, we've always done it.
And the suggestions of otherwise are just laughable. And you know, there comes a point where you say, I mean, yes, you've got certain people to answer to, given, you know, given political climate and so forth. But it's a little ridiculous to a certain degree. You know, people that have no idea what they're looking at or talking about, you know, trying to dictate to an industry. It just makes no sense. You know, you said something, and I got an immediate, as part of the explanation, Tony, about how these decisions get made and affecting changes, whether it's on a race day or not. It doesn't have to be. This is not limited just to race day deciding. And the communication part is essential. And there's a multi-layered, as there is with everything in this area, the complexity. But there's multi-layers here. There's the racing office. There's the horsemen. There's the exercise riders and the afternoon riders. You know, everybody interacting together, track management. And when you get vacuums anywhere along the way, between all the layers and everything that intertwines, that's when you get the ball dropped, and that's where a lot of times when they research the spikes in incidents, invariably, you know, there was a lack of communication being effectively executed. And so that part is really a point well made by you.
And it was learned over the years. It didn't just happen overnight at one racetrack. But I do take my hat off to some of the track superintendents. So many of them were so qualified in this area, such good racetrack superintendents in Jersey, Pennsylvania, in New York. And these guys, one of the things that I think helped them in doing their job was communication with, of course, horsemen, of course, communication with jockeys. The communication with jockeys is a little bit different than communication just with horsemen. Because, a trainer's watching his horses train. He's got owners. He's got, different people he's trying to satisfy. And at times, trainers, they don't feel what you feel when you're on that track as a jockey getting that horse around there. And exercise people in the morning. And good feedback between the exercise personnel. And, of course, you have to put people in a category. You do. You have to say, listen, when this guy says something, you better, take it and pay attention to what he's saying. If it's an exercise boy, or if it's another jock. And of course, you're going to have the chronic complainers and bitchers, But you're also going to have, you got that in any kind of industry, the guy that's sure. negative about everything. This ain't no good. And then you got the guy, that goes out there with an honest effort every time to try to make the game go on. And then he comes back and he says, listen, this track isn't good.
There's a problem. Something's wrong. Yep.
Something's wrong. And, I've been on it too many times. And it'll be the guy that, is respected in the jocks room by his fellow riders. Like I said, we're fierce competitors. But when it comes to safety, we tend to be on the same page at times.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've left the jocks room, and the next day I've come back, and of course, I'd tell any rider in there, listen, if you want to blame somebody, blame me. Don't take the heat, if it's going to cost you business. Because I'm at a point in my, this was over the years, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. I'm at a point in my business where I love the business, and I'll recover from any negative situation. You trying to get started, just say, Black told us. You know how many times I went to racetrack? Boy, if we'd get rid of you, Black, we could run these races. And then, I would say a few choice words, that I don't want to say on the air. But, I had some people that, really held it against me. But you know what? If you're out there and you're expressing an honest opinion and it isn't dictated by dollars and cents and my next horse that I'm going to ride or I want to ride for this guy, and they learn to understand, he expressed his opinion. It's honest. It's never, it might be controversial, but it's never self-serving, It's not a self-serving opinion. And he just happened to stay in business even after all this controversial opinions that he's expressed, after all these days that we've lost. And we've had winners where, we've lost tons of days,
sure.
At parks or at different racetracks that I've ridden at. And, at least he's expressing an honest opinion, and maybe he's saving us the inevitable that, you know, maybe it's an error on the side of caution, or maybe he's saving us from carting one of these jocks off the racetrack that hit the ground, or carting one of these horses off the racetrack, you know, that shouldn't have broke down. So they eventually they get over it. And you know what makes people get over things in this business? And I've been in it, you know, like going on 50 years now. And I rode a lot of races. But even before I started riding, I was on the racetrack. But what eventually gets people over it, if you go out there and you express an honest opinion and you show integrity and credibility, and then, you know, it really gets them over it, you keep winning. Or you recover and win. You might go a little dead because they got a hard one for you, but you recover and you win and you bounce back from the controversy. And then they learn to get respect. Well, maybe he was right. And if he wasn't, he had everybody's well-being, horses and jockeys' well-being in mind. And that's what you have to key in on. But I was one of those big mouths that got accused of being a canceling jock all the time. I mean, guess what? 150, 211 races. So, and maybe it saved some kid from really hitting the ground.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, you, certainly in this environment, erring—I mean, not that it's erring, but deciding on the side of caution—you know—is going to pay, you know, dividends long term. That part, you know, isn't. You know, you might grouse and be, you know, I thought the other day from what I was hearing, and, you know, I was not there. So it's, you know, when you're not there, you really can't say too much. But it seemed like the conditions didn't necessarily warrant cancellation. But the guys that are out there, you know, it's their call. So, Tony, a couple of things before we wrap, though. I got to ask you about a couple of horses. And even though you haven't been out the last 2 weeks watching what's going on, I see where Richie Vega is sending that one horse down to Laurel, Sir Back in Black.
That's my namesake.
Exactly.
You know, they said they named that horse, and they named me. They wanted to use my name in that horse's name. I said, you guys are kidding me. That's just something else. The owner said, no, we wanted to put your name in there. Said,
there you go.
Thanks a lot. And then the other horse, Papazar, is one that I got on every day. And he's training so good. Now, I haven't been out there for 2 weeks, but I'm going to tell you what. He was one you better get tied on when you're coming on and off the racetrack, playing, feeling good. Couldn't ask for a horse to be more in good order than he was at least 2 weeks ago. Yeah, and I miss getting on certain horses because, you know, I like getting on Collegeville Girl. I love that filly, you know, even though she didn't fire well her last time. I don't know why, but and Papazar, I like that horse. In fact, I even won on him, I guess, the year before last. I guess it was. I forget when I won on him, but I won on him. And I get on him every day, and that's what I miss. Now that I'm starting to heal up a little bit and feel better, I was ready to call Richie today and say, hey, Rich, I think I'm going to start coming out Monday. And I looked at the weather, and Monday it's going to be like 45, 50 degrees. Tuesday it's going to be 45, 50 degrees. I might come out Monday.
Nice.
And get on some horses, but Wednesday it's going to be like in the 30s. So I might not make it to Wednesday.
Well, Papazar tomorrow, actually, at Laurel, runs tomorrow, and then Sir Back in Black in the juvenile, the Maryland Juvenile, on Saturday. I also want to ask, and you mentioned Collegeville. As it happens, Carlisle Bell runs back tomorrow in similar, you know, similar spot, state bred fillies and mares allowance. And Bell zipped right by Collegeville, even though Kendrick tried to. He was trying to intimidate a little bit the top of the stretch when Benji came by with Carlisle. Watch the replay. He kind of comes out to meet her a little bit, and Collegeville's got a couple of feet on. It's a little bigger than Carlisle Bell. But, you know, what are your thoughts about Spun to Run Guerrero Saturday?
You know what? I my hat's off to Guerrero. You know, he went through a controversial situation.
Yep.
And survived it, and it turned out to be not a, a true situation that we even want to get in and talk about. But I'm so proud of him. He brought this horse around, and the job he's done with this horse and acquiring this horse and training this horse. You got to root for, you know, was considered just a claiming trainer, you know, and, you know, in fact, he was even out of the game, or well, wasn't on the track for a while. And what a recovery, and so deserving of a horse like this. I really like that horse. You know, Maximum Security, you got to like that horse. I mean, they're all hooking up, aren't they, in the...
Saturday in the Cigar Mile.
Yes, that, and I mean, I root... It's hard for me to root for one guy, and I think the world of Carlos Guerrero, and I think the world of Jason Service. He saddled many a horse at Monmouth Park when he was a valet in Jersey, you know, and here he's got a horse like Maximum Security, even though, it, you know, the controversial situation that came about with the Derby, but, you know, and it broke my heart to see him get taken down, but that's horse racing, you overcome it. When Maximum Security ran in Haskell, I wasn't really impressed with him. You know, I thought, well, he won it, but he just didn't look like he really fired big. He just beat horses that weren't running as good as him, and he wasn't running his best. So maybe he's going to come back really running. You know, a little bit of time helps, and he'll put his A-plus performance in. But it's hard for me to pick one over the other, because I think the world of both the guys that train them. I think the world of both those horses, and how can you fault Spun the Run after his last performance? I mean, it's going to be a great race. You know what? It's going to take a horse's A game to win that race. So we'll see which one's on his A game.
Yeah, looking forward to Saturday. It's a terrific card at Aqueduct, highlighted by the mile. Tony, this was tremendous. Great to catch up after several weeks off, and we'll make our way toward the end of the year and have some of those, you know, season-ending kind of conversations over the next couple of weeks. So,
and I'm going to try to put the soapbox away. I'm going to put the soapbox away where I don't get on it and beat your ear. But thanks for letting me vent, and you didn't even, cut me off. So.
No, not at all. Never.
I love you, Steve. Keep up the good
love you,
work.
Too. The one and only. Tony Black, everybody. Can't be beat. Let's take a break. Bottom of the hour, 90 minutes in. 90 to come. Steve Askin, and we'll dive into the PPs on all these two-year-olds, notably the Remsen and the Futurity, probably a little bit of the Phillies too, but we'll catch up with Steve Askin, and I've been saving the final odds on the Derby future wager as well. I've been keeping that over to the side of the desk because I knew Steve might incorporate some of those names. In the conversation, and I'm just wondering how many are running this week. Wrecking Crew, Thousand Words, High Velocity, and Odor. So four, 20% of this field is running, and Odor, those that bought in, you got them at 31-1. High Velocity, you got at 40-1. Thousand Words at 35-1, and Wrecking Crew 86-1. So the entire field of the Futurity was in the future wager. And all of those prices are pretty attractive. So somebody's going to have a Futurity winner at no less than 31-1. And the Futurity's good because it's got that, you know, LaSalle's got that hairpin setup and the long, long stretch. And, you know, don't forget, you know, 1,234 feet at Churchill. Let's step away. Haskin next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
To At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
One scotch, one bourbon, one beer.
We're back one at the races, scotch, 20 minutes to the top of the hour. Tony Black was back after a timeout, and he was on the muscle. Steve Haskin joining us, and this is always one of my favorite conversations on the calendar because I get to ask Steve how the tofurkey was.
The tofurkey actually was quite good. Cranberry sauce. Roll up the slices a little bit. Can't beat it.
Has tofurkey
put some gravy on it? Put some turkey gravy on it.
Has it evolved? Has it improved over the years with technology? as these artificial,
you know, well, actually some of the places like some of the places actually have turkey tofurkeys. I mean, like, not sliced, but they actually have, you know, a big hunk of it, like, you know, like a turkey. We have to slice it yourself. I haven't graduated to that yet. I'm content just taking the slices and rolling them up and putting some gravy on it. But it's got some texture to it, you know, sort of an artificial texture. But it fulfills you the way turkey would.
There you go. Does it make you sleepy?
What I was just going to say, without the tryptophan, you know, you. Listen, It happens. You know, that's the price you have to pay for turkey. You realize that turkey, by the way, I mean, turkey without gravy, it's actually not that interesting.
As a concept?
Well, I mean, especially if it's a little bit dried out, it said, you know, this really needs something. I mean, you got to put gravy on it. You got to have it with, I don't mean the homemade cranberry sauce, because I hate cranberries. To me, it's way too bitter or sour or whatever. But the ocean spray, which tastes nothing like cranberries, which is phenomenal. I can't have stuffy and turkey without ocean spray. I know you probably make your own, but it doesn't thrill me. You know, people put it in all these gels and ambrosias and stuff. Yeah. It's not that doesn't faze me. But ocean spray and gravy, you need, and stuffing, you need it to accompany turkey. If you just cut yourself a piece of turkey, I'm not talking about the drumstick. Drumstick, I used to, you know, when I was a kid, it was automatic. You know, Steve gets the drumstick. Everybody knew that. You know, especially that skin gets crunchy and everything. But the actual turkey itself, a sliced turkey, it's not like eating pepperoni.
You have to manage. You have to get out in front of it, and there is, you know, because it is such a big piece of you know, assorted meats. I mean, it's what's fascinating about turkey as a meal and as an item to cook. I mean, if you got the parts cut up, it's one thing. Like you can get a chicken cut up, but if you're cooking a whole turkey, it's a more involved process, just because the things all heat up at different times, and so, you know, tenting it in certain spots and covering sections with foil so that they don't over brown and burn, and the way the breast will, you know, have a tendency to dry out if, you know, you're trying to get that heat evenly through and get the, you know, get the whole bird to an internal temperature that, you know, that basically makes it servable. So it's a
who are you, Bobby Flay?
Well, listen, I've been in the food business my whole life, and
that's quite a description of turkey.
Well, you have to prepare it properly, and then you have to monitor its cooking, and whether you're going to dry brine or wet brine, you know, getting moisture in and you know, seasoning properly is instrumental. I mean, and I do a thing with a butter garlic schmear. You know, you get in under the skin, and you're, you know, I also, the last couple of years, I found a terrific Italian family recipe with bacon or pancetta
that's what my son-in-law Wes does when he, you know, like when they would come over for Thanksgiving and they would, you know, make turkey, he would monitor the turkey, because he's a very good cook, but he would wrap the entire turkey with slabs of bacon.
Sure, absolutely. That's the fat. You're doing that for the fat, and you can do it just as easy. You know, you can do that with butter as well, and olive oil. But getting under the skin, and having like an internal.
I think we're getting under people's skin right now.
No, they love it. Believe me, people love it because they're learning. You know, there is no greater satisfaction as a cook, as a home cook, than carrying off a Thanksgiving meal. It is. You know, especially if you're saddled with one oven, and you know it's very tricky in making it all come together. But to me, it's my favorite cooking enterprise of the year. And
Steve,
I cook
think
a
it's
lot.
A photo finish, by the way. Your most memorable accomplishment in life is either doing the radio show or your Thanksgiving meals.
It's very close.
It's hard to separate the two.
It is. I do the Thanksgiving thing once a year.
I know you take great pride in it and everything, and you make a big Thanksgiving feast without a kitchen.
Yes, this year without a kitchen.
You know,
next year,
not many chefs can say that.
That's a fair point. The funniest thing was how I don't know if you heard on Monday, but remarkably, you know, we were shooting for 3 o'clock, and we've always been sort of a mid-afternoon family, you know, 3 to 4. My mother, you know, not much earlier than 2:30 or 3, never later than 4:30. I was ready at 1:30 somehow, which shocked me.
On the muscle.
Maybe because I was so concerned that I was, you know, up against it from an execution standpoint, somehow everything just sort of worked. And that included, you know, I had a nice spread of appetizers. I made the mistake several years ago of doing, because my dad loves deviled eggs. So years ago when my father was able to come here, I started making a couple of things for him, deviled eggs and baked apples. My father is crazy for both. So once I started making deviled eggs, now I'm obligated. Yeah, well, baked apple.
Well, a blast from the past from my childhood. I never ate it as a child because I couldn't stand the look of it. You know, it just looked like an apple that just went bad.
Exactly.
You know, but I see people eating it and just saying, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, my mother used to make baked apples, and it would just turn me off looking at it. It just looked like an apple that's been sitting out for like 3 years.
They do get a little shrivelly and then a little ungapachka, but and I got to tell you, there's a reason baked apples aren't as popular now as they were when you and I were growing up, because it's a major potchke. I mean, to prepare them is a pain, and then to monitor, you have to monitor them, and they have to be basted on a regular, you know, you got to dip in with the turkey baster, and you got to spritz them with the juice, and it becomes like a caramel sauce. I've got a great recipe with a golden baked apple. With golden raisins. You core them out, you pack it with raisins and cinnamon and sugar, and then you do the rest of the baked apple stuff. Anyway, my father, I made it for him that one year, and he was beside himself because he hadn't had a baked apple probably since well before my mother died. So he was thrilled. But the thing that has become an institution now is the deviled eggs. And now I've got a piping, you know, like one of those piping bags, you know, like a cake decorator has. So when I make the deviled eggs, I got the little pattern on the, you know, on the egg schmear. They're like a little work of art. So I had those to do as well on Thursday. And I always make way more because Tina, you know, Tina can eat more eggs than Cool Hand Luke.
I love deviled eggs.
I'm not kidding. My man can eat 50 eggs. No man can eat 50 eggs.
Well, I had something for Thanksgiving that was even better than turkey. Much
go ahead.
Better than turkey.
A grandson.
No, they were in Iowa.
They went back to Iowa?
Yeah, for Wes's family.
It's like Field of Dreams. All right. Okay.
I've been to Field of Dreams. We played ball on it.
Unbelievable.
When we went to visit his family in Iowa, we went to the Field of Dreams, and it was still exactly the same as it was. Everything is there. There was nobody there. The owner was out, you know, manicuring the field over there. Wes's nephew, played in the Little League, happened to have his ball and his bat and his gloves in the car. And we went out and we were playing ball, and I'm standing up there and I'm whacking him out there on the Field of Dreams.
That's awesome.
To ourselves.
That's great.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. And the thing is, you're driving, there's nobody there, but there's a little there's a little gift shop. You can buy little souvenirs and stuff from the movie. But the little grandstand is there. And
that's great.
And the house, you know, they actually shot it in the house that's on the Field of Dreams there. But that was a blast. I've got a great photograph of Mandy swinging away and hitting the ball. But it was great. I hadn't hit a baseball in a long time, but I was it was great just standing up there and just knocking them out to the outfield. Didn't reach the cornfield though.
Well, I'm still impressed. I thought when you brought Mandy up, I thought you were going to say you had a picture of her petting Burt Lancaster.
No, I did not have that. But as I was saying before, by the way, I had something for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, go ahead.
That was much better than turkey. I had gefilte fish, and I mean really good gefilte fish. That
who made it?
The same person that makes them when we go to Avi and Rota's for Passover. they cater some stuff in, and whoever they get it from, this was from the store there, but it's like a log. You know, it's not like little pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a log. It is so homemade. It is so good. And she gave us a bunch to take home. And, oh, God, I didn't want to finish it. It was so good. You can't beat real gefilte fish. You know, not
nobody.
The stuff you get in the jar. I mean, homemade gefilte fish. And that's what this was. So that's the highlight. The highlight of
Thanksgiving
was gefilte fish.
That's pretty funny. You know, it's funny you mentioned that log. I had never seen that style until I lived in Montreal. And there's quite a few places in Montreal that'll prepare it that way. And I had not, that was unfamiliar to me, the big, you know, almost like a Yule log.
It's great. And the thing is, there's something about just cutting off a slice.
Yeah,
a small slice. You can cut off a big slice. And
Instead of individuals.
You know, and the texture is totally different. They put a big, gigantic carrot in there.
On the top. That's Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God, it was so good. I wish I had more.
Well, nobody made like my grandmother. Nobody.
Oh, I'm sure. The homemade.
She would sit there with the grinder. Oh my God, unbelievable! And grind it all up, and amazing. Although I will, when I get a chance, I'll teach you how to take the jar and how to make it, how to doctor it up. My mother taught me how to take it and doctor it, and you can add a step to it and cook it down further, and you'll be shocked how close it is to homemade.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. 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 Yep. Oh. It the key is that it's not in the jar. It's basically pasteurized. It's been cooked off and pasteurized. You then take it and add some broth. Add more broth. You can throw in a parsnip and a little carrot as well to cook in with it for flavor. But you then boil it down further, and you'll see it'll contract tighter the way your mother used to make, and then chill it, and you'll be shocked at the difference of what it was like when you took it out of the jar and then finished it. Trust me on this.
Well, you know, in the jar, like Joan and Mandy, by the way, they get
horrified.
Totally turned off by the gel in there. The gel does not bother me at all. I mean,
it's broth. That's all that is broth. It's a
look at it, you know. I mean, look at it. It looks like mucus. So
it's no different. I made turkey soup. The turkey soup after I chilled it, you know, to skim off the fat, it looks the same way. That's just broth. Put it in a pan and show it, let it melt it down, and it'll be like chicken broth or turkey broth.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we can just keep talking about this because I don't think there's anybody left listening. So
No. They believe me. They love it. Well, I got a bunch of stuff for you. I've got the future wager. I want some thoughts. And of course, we got the four horses from the Futurity that were in the future wager. We'll talk about the Remsen too. But, and I know we've got two more weeks, Steve. However, even though I knew, I got the fateful call Tuesday about Lenny, about Lenny's retirement, pending retirement. And we got two more weeks, and Lenny is going to, I mean, he's not going to completely fade from view, but.
Believe me, he sounds like he's going to be doing more work than he did when he was working. I mean, he's got so many gigs lined up, you know, and it looks like right now that he might even be going into the office like once a week, but he's going to still do several features for the, you know, for the Blood Horse. He's going to sign a contract to, you know, like I did, to work on a freelance basis. He's got gigs lined up with the New York Thoroughbred Breeders, with the Keeneland Magazine, with the Thoroughbred of California. He's looking to do a book. You know, he's got the University of Kentucky Press, you know, in his back pocket now, you know, after they did Justify. So he's got all these other ideas for books. He's going to be plenty busy.
Well,
but he will not be features editor.
We will get him. We will get in a visit before it's over, and Lenny retires. He also said he's going to do some volunteering at the dog shelter.
Oh, really? I didn't even realize that. I can see that.
Yeah. He's already got how many? He's got how many hunts? He's got like...
Well, he's got three.
Three.
Yeah. Which is usually his minimum. he gets a lot of his dog from Del Hancock. He goes to Claiborne Farm to her house, and you know, whenever she's got a litter or so, and a lot of times he'll go and he'll pick out a dog from Del Hancock.
The
Black Labs. That's his.
I thought you were about to say that that Lenny gets his gefilte fish from Del Hancock.
Yeah, right. I hear he makes very good gefilte fish.
This is so typical.
I can just picture her slaving at the stove and, you know, just mixing all the pike and the whitefish and everything.
Exactly.
And mixing it up.
Exactly.
And, you know, with her little apron over there, over the pots and pans. And,
So great. Well, we will get a Lenny Steve retirement. The shocker about this is that you know, we thought you were hanging up the typewriter, and Lenny ends up technically officially retiring before you.
That's true. Well, the thing is, we're in the same position. You know, he retired from the Blood Horse as I retired from the Blood Horse, but technically we're both semi-retired because we're still doing a lot of work.
Yeah,
you know, I'm still doing. You know, listen, you know, Derby Dozen coming up. I'm going to be. You realize how I'm busy every single day of the week with that.
Absolutely.
That's something a lot of people look forward to. That, and you know, it takes a lot of preparation, and it's going to take even more preparation this year to come up with 12 horses out of possibilities. I mean, it's so totally spread out and wide open this year that. You know, I can just picture the first Derby Dozen with the comments. You know, what happened to this horse? How could you leave this horse out? What happened to this? You know what? Oh, you're right. Oh, you don't have this horse, and you must be a hater.
That's right.
People don't realize that. You know, if you put out like a list of like top 25. And you have a horse listed at 14, nobody says anything. But if they're not in the top 12, that means they're like nowhere. I mean, I try to convince them. I said, well, right now, you know, he's right knocking on the door. He's like, he might be number 13 or 14. But if they don't see that there, then all of a sudden it means, you know, you hate the horse. That, you know, oh, you don't like him at all. You know, 12 horses is not a lot to come up with, you know, when you have, especially this time of the year, when you have so many of them. And, you know, you got to watch every single maiden race, and you never know who's going to pop up. And then you get some horse that, you know, breaks his maiden by 15 lengths, and you say, what do I do with him? You know, there's so many horses right now that are accomplished in stakes races. And this year has been just an absolute crazy year. And we'll see when they have, you know, when they start voting for the Eclipse champion. Actually, when you think about it, by the way, when you look at all the races coming this weekend, the big winner already, we already have a big winner before all the races are run, and that's Storm the Court.
Yeah.
You know, when Tis the Law got beaten at the Kentucky Jockey Club and Eight Rings withdrawn from the Los Al Futurity, and there's no top two-year-olds going in the Remsen, there's really no one else to give the Eclipse Award to. You know, I guess you could think, you know, if Anno Dor romps in the Los Al Futurity, you could maybe think of him, but to me, that would only make Storm the Court and the Breeders' Cup Juvenile look stronger. Speaking of which,
fair.
By the way, to show you, I wrote a whole column on Storm the Court, and what an enigma this horse is, and I've never seen a horse like this before, where the opinions of him are so diverse, and there's so many contradictions that people say I have absolutely no clue what to make of this horse. I mean, the first Future Wager comes out. And Mike Battaglia, for some bizarre reason, makes him the 12-1 co-favorite with Independence Hall. This is a horse that just won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at 45-1 by a neck in a race where none of the favorites showed up. You know, one of them literally and two of them figuratively.
Hmm.
And, you know, people looking at the Juvenile, you know, it's like some fluky race. And 12-1 co-favorite. I said, there is no way on earth this horse is going to go off at 12-1. Well, not only does he not go off at 12-1, but the public takes it completely the opposite direction and sends him off at 41-1.
Yep.
Which is even more ludicrous than the 12-1. I mean, you got a Breeders' Cup Juvenile and, a good chance to be the two-year-old champion. 41-1? I mean,
yep.
He's got the pedigree. And you got to remember, by the way, is that after Anno Dor, there was gaps of like 3.5 and then 4.5 to the next horses. We don't know how strong a race that was just because, you know, Eight Rings just stopped. And, you know, like Baffert said, he had lost weight after he won the American Pharoah, and he's given him more time to, put some weight back on. And he said the track was extremely deep, and he just didn't handle it. And we saw what happened to Dennis's Moment at the start. He never showed up at all. He just ran around the racetrack, and Maxfield didn't show up at all. You know, he got hurt. So you're looking and said somebody had to win that race, but we don't know if it was a fluky race or he's that good. He may be. he's got the pedigree. He ran well enough in the American Pharoah. You know, he's a grade one winner and grade one placed. So we don't know how good this horse is. We don't know how good Anno Dor is. You know, he was coming off the grass. You look at two favorites in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. How many times do you see the two favorites in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile both lost their rider in a race? Before that, I mean, how unusual is that?
Yeah.
Everything is unusual this year. We really don't know what to make of it. Now, you know, some people, when they vote for the Eclipse Award, they might say, you know what? They might just go out on a limb and vote for Independence Hall because his race was so totally spectacular. I mean, you got it. I'm sure you saw that. Well, I'm sure you saw this too. He's got a -2 in the Thoroughgraph. I mean, how many 2-year-olds get -2s? I mean, -2s will win most Kentucky Derbies. He's already got a -2 on there. So people might look at him. People still might look at Maxfield, and may say, you know, maybe he's the best. You know, if they don't want to vote for Storm the Court, but it's going to be very, very weird betting.
Voting. Yep.
Voting for and as you can see, and the future wager was weird betting too. Yeah, like even Anno Dor at 31-1. So people don't know what to do. I don't think they have no clue what to do with this crop of 3-year-olds. And the crazy part is that there's like at least 6 or 7 of them who could be very special. So it's going to be very, very unusual.
Well,
we'll see what happens in the Los Al Futurity.
Let's talk two things, Steve, as part of the Futurity and Anodore, High Velocity, 1,000 Words, and Wrecking Crew. And also fold in, you know, you referenced Tis the Law getting upset in the Jockey Club at Churchill on Saturday. And I think if you went around, people would be hard pressed to say who won. I mean, Silver Prospector, we talked about with Steve Asmussen the other day. And, you know, it's funny because Darren Rogers had said that this was that Silver Prospector was dangerous in there. And, you know, obviously the trip and being bottled up for literally a mile, takes its toll on a horse, a young horse being asked to do something, you know, a bunch of things for the first time. I think that, you know, being overly judgmental on Tis the Law. I mean, he did still, despite the getting beat, he still got bet in the future wager. He went off at 11-1.
Well, that to me is crazy too, to go off at 11-1 after getting beat. I'm not going to hold that loss against him. You know, it was a sloppy track. He didn't have the best of trips. You know, he had to pull his way through horses, which he wasn't used to. You know, down on the inside, looked like at one point he was going to get totally shut off, but. Look at the first three finishes of the Street Sense. The first two finishes of the Street Sense run completely up the track, way up the track, and the third place finishes wins. So again, how do you figure it? I mean, how do you look at this crop of 2-year-olds? You know, it just makes no sense. You know, a lot of people thought that, you know, looking at the Street Sense, that, you know, these horses, you know, looked like South Bend was going to be a really nice horse, and you know, Fighting CB looked like he was going to be a nice horse.
Meh.
You know, I mean, nice. I said nice. That's the whole thing. You know, so you just don't know. But they did no running at all in the Kentucky Jockey Club, and the horse that they beat winds up winning the race. But right now, the Kentucky Jockey Club is not, you know, one of the top races. I mean, Tis the Law, I still think, is the best horse in there, but he certainly deserves another chance. You know, again, sloppy track, and, you know, Barkley Tech might be hoping right now, not hoping, but wishing he had kept him in New York and running to Remsen, because Remsen really had no standouts. So, you know, you might get some emerge from there. But there's no really big name horses.
Do you want to talk about Remsen first?
My favorite thing with the 2-year-olds is, and I'm not going to go into it, don't worry about it, but I'm just saying, was learning that eight rings is going to make your debut in the sprint race. That's all I'll say.
Right. Derek Lawson said that you'll love that. He said Haskins going to love that. That eight rings
That's
is going.
That's my
there.
Thing. You know that.
Yeah. Was it Derek that said to somebody? Somebody said that.
I haven't written a column about it since Nyquist, an exaggerator, ran 1-2 in the San Vicente. So it might be time. Might be time to do another
Let's
column
it out.
To get on my soapbox again and wake people up to a word that a lot of people don't know anymore. It's called history.
Well, let's,
you know, have got to chase those points. No, you know, and Churchill Downs refuses to give sprint races the fear that, oh, we don't want no sprinter in the Kentucky Derby. You know, these are prep races, horses running in sprints in January and February. They're not, that doesn't mean they're sprinters.
Yeah,
but what you got to do is look at the names of the horses. Every single classic winner and every 2- and 3-year-old champion in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, every one of them started out in the sprint. So, see, I'm getting myself a little started up already, which I promised not to do.
Exactly. Since we're seemed like we're on the verge of talking about the Remsen, and I haven't really, other than mentioning that it had a nice field of nine. Let's take the Remsen first, and then we'll talk Los Al. And this, it's a group of nine. It's a fairly accomplished group, and everybody has made at least two starts, and a couple have already, quite a few have already been two turns. So from that standpoint, or at least a one turn route of ground, because New York, so many of the routes are one turn. But it's an interesting group, and there's a horse that's scratched to stay in this spot and stay on the East Coast. That Shotsky of Jerry O'Dwyer's that has really been moving forward nicely. He participated in that Street Sense. He was actually behind Silver Prospector.
Yeah. He actually ran a good race. He only beat two lengths.
Exactly. And he's a Blame out of a Bluegrass Catmare, Adam Wachtel and Gary Barber and some partners. And I thought the Shotsky, I didn't really think much of it when he scratched, but when he turned up last night in the overnight, kind of raised an eyebrow at how progressive he is. You've got Alpha 66 for our friend Paul Pompa and a $400,000 Liam's Map. That won at First Asking and ran evenly in the Champagne. Didn't run badly. Was fifth, beaten less than five.
The thing is with him, if you look at the comment, it said shy in at the start. He didn't shy in at the start. Go watch the race. The two horse came in and just completely knocked them off stride. That's why he dropped back to last. Once he dropped back, he was like four lengths, behind the next to last horse. And he really had no shot after that. And like you said, he ran evenly. And listen, Tis the Law is in there and Green Light Go. There's some nice horses in front of him. So, again, he was beaten less than five lengths. Certainly have to give him another shot. I don't know. Liam's Map out of a Giants Causeway mare. Mile and Eighth is, again, a tricky, tricky distance. These are the horses that need to go back to a sprint, because when you run a Mile and Eighth this early on, like I said, it just tends to dull you. Because, what are they going to run the Remsen in? What they usually do, 152, 153? It's always slow. The track is always slow this time of the year. But I'll tell you an interesting horse to watch in there is Shug's horse, Amends.
Mm-hmm. And I
know
yesterday.
I know he's only coming off a maiden win, and he only got a 60. He only got a 60 Briar. But if you watch that race, he made a long, sustained run, and he was just picking off horses one by one. And for a young horse, to start making his move on the backstretch and just keep coming and passing horses. And he was very professional coming down the stretch. Rosario didn't really abuse him. He just has the look of a runner. And, again, when you look at the time of 147-1 for Mile 16. You say, it's a slow. He only got a 60 buyer. But number one, that was a very sloppy track. And not only was it sloppy, but what you have to do is look at the track variant. 37. That's like one step away from a mud hole. That track had to be extremely deep. And, his speed rating was only a 63. But in the old ways, you would add the two up. And 63 and 37, it comes out to 100. And that's always the standard you look for. Any horse who in the old days, when you looked at the old Morning Telegraph or Daily Race Report past performances, when you added up, that was one of the handicapping tools, adding up the track variant and the speed rating. And if it added up to like 100, you knew that was a very legitimate race. Well, his race added up to 100. You don't see many 37 track variants. That just shows you how slow that track was. And it was his first race with blinkers on. And again, I just like the look of him. He's Uncle Mo out of a Medaglia d'Oro mare. He's got to overcome the nine hole. But if he gets a good trip in here, I don't know how good he is. But you will see. His first race, he didn't break well at all. And it was at seven furlongs, and he finished sixth, but he was way, 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 way too far back in that race. So, and I think he improved a lot with the blinkers on. So you throw out the first race. He's a different horse with the blinkers on. Obviously a different horse going two turns. Bred to go the mile and an eighth for sure. So I'm curious. If this horse runs an impressive race here, he's got to be a very serious horse. Yeah, sometimes you just look at a horse and you can see that, you know, this horse just looks like a runner. I remember looking at Catholic Boy when he ran in the Remps and seeing him in the paddock. I said, "Wow, this is a racehorse." And watching amends, you know, in the winner's circle of that maiden race, he has the look of a really nice horse. So I'm really curious to see what he does in here. But like you said, Shotsky is a horse too that, you know, it's got the credentials. Alpha 66. You know, you go back to his maiden race that he won by a neck, but the second horse was eight lengths ahead of the third horse, which is something I always love to see. And after his last start, Plutch has taken the blinkers off of him, so I'm expecting another big race from him. So, you know, any one of those three horses that could emerge. A horse that I was very impressed with last year when he broke his maiden was that Archerweed, Karen McLaughlin's horse for Shadwell. You know, he broke his maiden going a mile, and it was a solid mile, and he just drew off in that race. He drew off in that horse, Forza de Oro, who came back and won and is also in the Remsen. He was a bit disappointing in the Breeders' Futurity. He was in the back of the pack, but Maxfield just absolutely blew by him on the turn. Like he looked like he was standing still. Maxfield went by him so fast, and he plodded along and was beaten. You know, was a well beaten fourth in there. But I'm not giving up on him. He's certainly bred for distance. He's by curling out of a Daher mare. So I'm curious to see how he bounces out of that race. So. No, he looks interesting in here. The horse on the rail, Todd Plutch's other horse, Chase Tracker, gets blinkers on after he got creamed by Independence Hall, which I'm not going to hold that against him. But he was a well-beaten third in there after breaking his maiden impressively at Parks. Plutch sent him to Parks to break his maiden, and you can't knock that anymore. Every place you look now, horses are coming from Parks. They're all over the place. You know, you start looking at some of the other races over the weekend, and you're seeing horses that you look at their past performances, and there's a Parks race in there somewhere.
That's true.
So Parks is not quite like it used to be. So I mean, all in all, like I said, there's no standout in the Remsen, but. You know, there are several horses that could emerge from this race and be, and look like a legitimate Derby horse. But, you know, the horses I'm looking at mostly is Amends, Alpha 66, Shotsky, and maybe, you know, and also Archerweed. So, you know, yeah. Those are the four I'm looking at mostly.
Well, the fact, you know, and plus the fact that Archerweed, that Ron Anderson sticks with Kieran and the Shadwell homebred. Not that getting Jose Ortiz is any kind of a come down, but clearly Rosario, you know, chooses to ride Archerweed here after having the mount on Amends in his first two starts. For those that track that, you know, I will say this, that before we talk about the Futurity, Steve, Shug was with me. Was that yesterday or Tuesday? And we had a fun conversation as always. And he sounded sky high about Alondra coming into the Demoiselle.
Yeah, she looks. She's
good race.
Nice filly. Yeah, you know, Alondra. I thought she ran a terrific race in the Alcibiades. I mean, she had a terrible start in that race. She was absolutely nowhere, and the fact that she got up to third in that race, I thought was very impressive. You know, and again, when she broke a maiden. She only won by half a length, but the second filly, you know, was five lengths ahead of the third horse. And it's something I always look at. And you look at her pedigree, you know, she's going to go, you know, she's going to love the Destiny of Blame out of an AP Indy mare. So, you know, I can certainly see Shug being high on her. I think she's a very good filly. She could develop into one of the top fillies next year. And you got to remember, too, by the way, you know, she broke up, like I said, she broke a maiden by a half a length at Saratoga. She was a favorite, the Alcibiades. You know, in an 11-horse field, she goes off as a 2-to-1 favorite. So, obviously, people had a lot of respect for her.
Now, and much like what you referenced with Maxfield, his win, similarly, British Idiom blew that race apart anyway. So
right.
She's maybe a little dirtied up in there. All right, let's turn our attention to...
And listen, British Idiom obviously showed that was a tough fluke by coming back. Exactly.
Well, and speaking of British Idiom, of course, in the Starlet, we do have the only grade one of the weekend, and we do have Donna Veloce coming back and ran a whale of a race, as did Bast, and those two headline the Starlet. And, you know, I know people, Steve, are like losing their minds, like they do about everything. They're losing their minds because there's four horses in the Low South Futurity. I'd like to know exactly what other cannon fodder was necessary in here, other than the second and third place finishers from the Breeders' Cup and two of Baffert's potentially best 2023 year olds. I'm fine with this group.
Oh, yeah. Hey, listen, I'd love to see Honor AP in here as well, but looking at these four, it's going to be a jockey's race, and it's going to be just very interesting how things work out. And I'll tell you one thing, Bob Baffert, you know, sometimes when he talks up a horse, when he talks about a horse a lot, and, you know, a lot of people looking at, you know, the hot horse is, you know, 1,000 words. Baffert has not stopped talking about high velocity. And I've known Baffert long enough that when he starts, when he keeps mentioning the same horse and he keeps telling you over and over again that this is a really good horse, I would take that to the bank. So, you know, 1,000 words might be the horse that's going to get bet here, but Baffert's the horse Baffert's talking up big time is high velocity. Even though if you look at Equibase speed figures, 1,000 words got a 106 in his first start. You know, high velocity got 100 when he won the Bob Hope, but you know those things really don't mean that much to me. You're talking about different racetracks. And the thing is, do we know how good Anno Dor is? The one thing about Anno Dor in his last start, if you watch Juan Hernandez hits him 17 times in that race. I counted. I watched the race over. He was hitting him on the far turn. So to me, that in some ways, that makes Storm the Court look even better, that this horse could not catch him. So it depends on how you want to look at it. Do you want to say, well, you know, you got to be hit 17 times. That's an awful lot. But because at the quarter pole, he looked like he was going to win the race.
Yeah.
And I gave him a shot in here because, again, he was an unknown factor going in. You know, he romps by 8 lengths on the grass, and he's a horse who's bred for the dirt. You know, he's not even, you know, he's a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Tappet mare. He's certainly bred for the dirt. We said we have no clue how good this horse is. So I don't know how much he's going to improve off of that. He certainly could improve off of it. And he should. You know, I mean, Wrecking Crew, you know, listen, he's not going to blow you away, but he's never run a bad race. He's run 4 times, never been out of the money. These other horses have run once or twice. He's got a lot more bottom under him. His speed figures are good. He's only beaten 3 lengths in the Breeders' Cup. He's going to be the fourth choice here, I would imagine. So, I mean, you know, not only that, but he's not only has he run 4 times, he's placed in 2 grade ones and a grade two. So, yeah, I'm certainly not going to count him out, especially Peter Miller, who seems to win these kind of races. Peter Miller wins these races when you don't expect it. And yeah, the last few years, Peter Miller is—he's sent out a lot of good horses, and I mean, it wouldn't shock me if this horse ran big in here. He's coming up with a series of six furlong workouts.
And he's never run a bad race. He's been in every race that.
Yeah, he's had a win 2 seconds in a third. And he's been running in grade ones and grade twos, and he's placed in there. So certainly can't discount him from here. Rockingham Ranch and the partnership of Rockingham Ranch and David Burns, and they've had tremendous success over the last few years. Seems like those silks are everywhere now. Every time you see those silks, they always seem to run a good race. So again, it's going to be a jockey's race here, and it's not your typical group of jockey. You got Juan Hernandez, Abel Cedillo, Drayden Van Dyke, and Flavian Pratt. So it's going to be interesting to see how it works out and who's going to go to the front in this race. You would think High Velocity will. But, you just don't know. You don't know what they're going to do with Anodor from the inside. So I'm fascinated by this race. Like I said, I'd love to see Honor AP in here only because of how impressive he looks. And, the word was out on him before he even started. So we'll have to wait on him. But, I'll take these four any day of the week. And it's the same thing with the Starlet. I'll take that small field when you can come up with fillies like Donovan Rochi and Best. I mean, both coming off of monster efforts in the Breeders' Cup.
We've also got, in addition, you've also got a maiden race worth watching after the Starlet, the eighth. These are boys going six, and you've got some debuters, you got some horses coming back. Baffert's got that Coolmore Warfront called Warpath. You've got Hallowed Gift, West Point, and John Sadler. This was a $250,000 OBS April purchase. Baffert brings back that Twirly Canding colt, Ra'ad, that produced 1,000 Words.
They paid $500,000 for that horse, too.
Yes, they did.
He's going to improve off his last start. He was fourth, but he's going to improve. Against Drayden Van Dyke. Last time he had a Buck Boy on him. But listen, there's a bunch of maiden races. There's three of them at Aqueduct on Saturday, and you got this one here. So. Again, if anybody, I tell you another thing too. By the way, you watch out. You start looking. You look at the stake race they have at Aqueduct on Friday, where you had a couple of main track only horses that are in the Remsen, including Alpha 66. So, if you start looking, by the way, you start looking at all these American Pharaohs, running on the grass. I don't care if these grass races or not. All these horses you see running on the grass now, they're going to go on the dirt soon enough. I mean, American Pharaohs, what are you going to do with them? If you got a 2-year-old that's run well on the grass, it's like a horse like Structor, he's not an American Pharaoh, but, he's a horse that's never run on dirt, but he's heading for the dirt. All these grass horses, there are no races for them. If you have a grass race, a grass horse, a lot of times trainers are putting the horses on the grass, these young horses, just to get a 2-turn race into them, or to get a longer race, or to get a race that fills if they're ready to run. Doesn't necessarily mean they're grass horses. You get so many horses with dirt pedigrees now running on the grass. So when you start looking at all these American Pharaohs, they're not American Pharaohs. They're all running well on grass. Yeah, but believe me, they're all going to go to the dirt. And they could be just as good on the dirt. There's no reason why they shouldn't be.
Well, certainly Coolmore is going to hope they're going to be as good on the dirt. That
But that needs
to start happening.
There's no reason why they shouldn't be. Listen, American Pharaoh could have turned out to be a tremendous grass horse himself, but he'd win the Triple Crown. And And if you look at his pedigree too, I mean, you know, it's still all dirt. He just happened to be running well on grass. But I'm just saying, they're all going to go.
At some point, they're going to get a chance. Yeah, they're going
to
get a chance.
Yeah, there's nothing to do. What are you going to do? Point for the Transylvania or something? I mean, you know, you're going to give these horses a chance. You got to give them a chance on the dirt.
Well, among, you know, you mentioned since we got the other two-year-old races out of the way, there are two divisions of the maiden specials at Aqueduct on Saturday. We'll talk tomorrow with Dave Grenig, and you've got the first and the fifth. So the start and the finish of the early pick five, and 1 mile on the main track, and among the participants, the $725,000 colt out of Grace Hall, Orifice, and Mark Hennig for Don Adam, and there's quite a few others with experience. Cost Basis is going to be the heavy favorite in that first. This is an Into Mischief that ended up running a good second in its second start when he stretched out in October at Belmont. You've got the Hysterical Lady, Tappet colt, Tappage for Godolphin that faltered, frankly, going a mile and an eighth earlier in the month. In here as well, second time out for Farmington Road, Eclipse, and the Chrysalis people that bred this colt. It's funny, quite a few May foals in this thing that are jumping off the page at me. Orifus is a May foal. First Line for Orlando Noda is a May foal. How about that Quality Road is a May foal. Mischief Afoot, a May foal.
The Quality Road, I assume you're talking about Farmington Road?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a nice horse. You know, and, you know, he gets Castellano. And again, you know, people are going to look, hey, he ran a 58 buyer first time out. But he was so far out of it. And he had a swing really wide. I know he's part of an entry, but he was 1-2 in his first start. So again, I know it was part of an entry, but you know, it's Eclipse, and it's going to be interesting. I think he's going to show dramatic improvement off his first start. You know, and the thing is, you know, these races are at a mile. You know, plus you got a 6-furlong maiden race on the same card. We could get some nice horses in there.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of first time starters in there that look interesting. You know, McLaughlin's got a first timer. Bill Mott's got a first timer. Jeremy Englehart has got a first timer.
Jonathan Thomas for Mr. Evans for yeah. Ralph Evans, Quixotic, a Quality Road colt, $300,000.
Plus, he got a great named horse in here too. By the way. He got a horse by Competitive Edge out of a Distorted Humor mare named Trash Talker.
That one for Dermot Magner. Yeah, cute.
Yeah,
yeah. Astronaut.
I'm not familiar with the with that trainer. I don't know how good he is, but you know, the horse is coming off a nice race.
He's okay, Magner. He's all right. He's been on with me.
Asmussen's got a first timer by Quality Road in here.
I had Asmussen on Tuesday, and I asked him, I think, about just about the maiden winners that he'd had over the weekend, over the holiday. And then there literally were another six or seven that I couldn't even get to. I mean, it was
deep. You know, and it's Silver Prospector to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And finite. Well, Steve, this was tremendous. Ended up doing an hour unexpectedly, but always fabulous.
Well, we divide our time, and it's,
yes.
So the thing is, you know, that's the lure. You know, people are listening in saying, should I keep listening to talk about turkey and gefilte fish and stuff? You know, should I wait? So as long as we have something to promise them in the second half, you know, at least we'll get them to stick around and listen to all the nonsense we talk about ahead of time. But, you know, it's like a lead-in. You know,
exactly.
it's like if you go see the Stones in concert, you know, you got to sit through the opening band first. So.
Exactly. It was always a unexpected treat on the early portion. We never know where it's going to lead.
No, we're going to look. At worst, people are going to learn something, right?
Exactly.
They're going to learn how to baste the turkey.
That's
they're gonna
right.
Learn, they're going to learn how to go out and you know what to do with gefilte fish gel.
I'll send you a note with that so you can. You can benefit from my mother. My mother taught me that. So, Steve.
Well, listen, that's what you need. I mean, you know, your mother. That's it. That's all the qualifications you need if you got it from your mother.
Exactly. I will talk to you. I'm going to be home. I won't talk to you from Arizona. I'll be back from California and Arizona. So.
Yeah, so you're doing some panel, right?
I'm doing the show, and I'm doing the surface, actually, the racing surface panel, which I'm looking forward to.
Right.
Should be good. And I'll be at Los Al on Saturday.
The most ubiquitous presence in the thoroughbred racing. So.
Can't say ubiquitous without Bic.
There you go. You Bic.
Talk to you next week. Steve Haskett, everybody. Oh, my God. We'll talk to Rich Eng after this. It was his birthday the other day.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
At the track or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's BYK, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's BYK to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100.
And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories.
stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Took a trip on a bus that I didn't know. Met a girl selling drinks at the disco. That truth comes back when you let it go. Seem complicated cause it's really so simple. Walking down Young Street on a Friday. Can't follow them, gotta do it my way. No fast lane, still on the highway. Moving in and out, no doubt there's a bride.
No time to get down cause I'm moving up. No time to get down cause I'm moving up. No time to get down cause I'm moving up. Shake off the grass in the bucket. No time to get down cause I'm moving up. No time to get down cause I'm moving up.
We're back.
No time to get down cause I'm moving up.
And Rich is taking a vacation, so we won't bother Rich. But we will say happy birthday. I don't want to miss an opportunity to extend those regards. I actually got some house cleaning here we can maybe do. And that includes from earlier this morning, I should have mentioned that New York was off the turf, and that is going to put a dent in today's Tepin Stakes. One MTO, very clever, the Dreamweaver, George, has got the Daredevil filly, I Dare You, which George actually owns with Randy Hill. And very clever of George to enter MTO with this first out winner. And that came at Belmont, and she's actually worked nicely since. For, her trick and fielding bred, and it looks like a bargain. Wow, $25,000 at OBS April. So you got an MTO to deal with, and the only other horse with dirt experience is More Glitter, the More Than Ready that Mike Rapoli has with Todd. And let's see, they should actually, the scratches and such should be up because it is 11:40. In fact, probably getting ready to dive into, depending on what the post time is in New York, the post time changes every day. I've never seen anything like it. It's the craziest thing. You literally have to check every day when the races start. So let's see in the third who's come out of here, and you can scratch Enola Gay that we talked to. Shug knew. We knew Enola Gay was coming out. Shug told us that, and it looks like that's it, really. That's it. Only Enola Gay. So everybody is going to try their filly on the main track. And there is actually some main track form and or at least pedigree. They're going to do this at a mile, by the way, is the adjusted distance. Stretch the Story that Alan Cartucci has with Harold Ventures. Andy Bednall, who breeds a nice horse, New York bred. And this is a Looking at Lucky out of a Stephen Got Even mare. And plenty of reason for this horse to take to the main track. Also gets first Lasix in the fourth career start. Interesting. Very interesting. Quality Heat on the outside for Cassie and Gary Barber. So the Tepin on the main track today. And I'm just looking up, and I think we got Richie Baltus. Do we?